on Annenberg Radio News.
What's heartbreaking is, you know, never being able to hug him. Knowing that the only time he is making eye contact with a human being is when he is able to get a visit.
From inside prison to protests through downtown and the streets of Crenshaw, we bring you voices from across Los Angeles. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for October 6, 2011. I'm Regina Graham. 10 anti-Wall Street protesters were arrested downtown this afternoon after entering a Bank of America. They were a small part of Refund California, a coalition that marched to protest bank policies. They were joined by demonstrators from Occupy LA who've been camping outside City Hall since this weekend. Melissa Reynolds has more on the movement.
The march started with a rally at California Plaza, then snaked its way through the skyscrapers and food plazas at the financial heart of L.A. The marchers stopped at the intersection of 7th and Figueroa Streets in front of both a Bank of America branch and Chase Bank office in the Ernst & Young Plaza. The marchers were young and old, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, students, grandparents, homeowners, young families, all upset with the irresponsibility of financial organizations. Barbara Gustafson joined the protest after she saw a lack of cooperation from banks in renegotiating her mortgage.
It's game playing, and you know, you don't get the same person to talk to, and they don't want to work with you because it behooves them to foreclose. I am not an activist by nature. I've been forced to do this because when right shows up to be too right, you can't ignore it.
A police spokesman estimated that 1,000 turned up for the protest, which mirrors the Occupy LA protest of the last week. James McDade works in the finance services industry, but supports the protesters.
It's democracy at work. People have the right to express their opposition to ideas, and I think it's great.
The march was a coalition of groups including ACCE, SEIU, various faith-based groups, and others. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa says he's not waiting for national politicians to create jobs in L.A. At a town hall meeting today, he laid out plans he said would make the city more business-friendly. These include speeding up the process to get permits and giving local businesses preference in bidding for city contracts. The mayor says he's considering lowering or getting rid of some business taxes in an effort to make L.A. more competitive. Those taxes currently bring in $430 million a year to the city. Spokesperson Teddy Davis says the mayor is also pushing forward new construction projects.
We are not waiting for Washington. We're taking concrete steps right now in Los Angeles to create jobs. There's this big modernization going on at LAX right now, huge modernization. It's a $4.1 billion project. It's going to create, in total, 39,000 jobs. We're seeing jobs piling up from the different policies that he's putting into place.
LA has an unemployment rate of just below 15%. Teachers union representatives are calling on LA Unified School District to rehire laid-off teachers to improve class sizes and student learning in the district. Reporter Aaron Schrank has more.
United Teachers Los Angeles is calling on the district to rehire 1,200 teachers and support staff that were laid off last spring due to budget cuts. UTLA held a news conference today in front of Manual Arts High School in South Los Angeles, a particularly troubled school where 3,000 students learn in a space built for 1,000. The problems at Manual Arts are about more than dealing with reduced resources. The school is currently under the management of a nonprofit reform group, and its influx of students is the result of a move from a multi-track year-round schedule to a traditional calendar this fall. Representatives at the conference demanded the school district use its $55 million year-end surplus from last school year to ease strained schools. UTLA President Warren Fletcher says the biggest problem in LAUSD schools is overcrowded classrooms.
We have gigantic class sizes. We have Algebra 2 classes with over 50 students. We have PE classes with over 80 students. If you're a seventh grader and you're in one of those ridiculously overcrowded classrooms, well, you don't ever get to be in seventh grade again. So it is something that needs to happen now. The children can really no longer wait for this.
Manual Arts is one of two L.A. high schools that has been managed by independent nonprofit L.A.'s Promise. The L.A. Times reported today that LAUSD officials are poised to retake substantial management control of the school. While UTLA has been a critic of the nonprofit, it says the district's hoarding of its surplus funds is to blame for the troubles at Manual Arts and schools like it. History teacher Daniel Beebe says the lack of staff at Manual Arts is a problem.
And obviously when you add 8, 9, even 10 students to a classroom, it cuts down your ability to give as much individual support and attention to the students that they deserve.
A controversial state law was passed with the budget that prevents school districts from laying off teachers during budget shortages. The union says the law, AB 114, gives the district the go-ahead to bring teachers back.
This is a serious, serious matter, and the money is there to alleviate it. The school board and the superintendent need to act now. We have already burned a month of school. We can't burn a whole school year.
Spokespersons for both LAUSD and LA's Promise said they were unable to comment. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
USC may be close to taking over day-to-day management of the L.A. Coliseum. The president of the Coliseum Commission said yesterday he supports such a deal, which would allow the school to make major renovations. Without those, he said, the L.A. Coliseum could become as decrepit as Rome's within 20 years. But some neighborhood residents oppose the change in ownership. They say public property shouldn't be given over to a private entity. If USC takes control of the stadium, it could also be used as a temporary home for a new NFL team. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 53. Tomorrow we'll have sun and a little more warmth with a high of 73. And this weekend we'll heat back up with lots of sun and highs in the 80s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we remember Steve Jobs' huge role in the animation world. Today at UCLA, supporters of prisoners who are on a hunger strike held an event to call attention to conditions facing California inmates. They staged readings from the prisoners' own words, from letters they have written. The hunger strike is in its 11th day. Smitha Bondade reports.
Imagine living in a small, windowless 8-by-10-foot room with little to no human contact. These are the prison cells that inmates are forced to live in for months or even years on end. Some inmates in California state prisons are now on a hunger strike to protest living conditions at the Pelican Bay State and other facilities. Dolores Canales is the mother of a prisoner at Pelican Bay.
And what's heartbreaking is, you know, never being able to hug him, knowing that when I'm sitting at a visit, the only time he is ever making eye contact with a human being is when he is able to get a visit.
Canales' son, John, is taking part in the hunger strike, and she worries about his health.
This could be very serious to where they do start dying and where they do start, you know, becoming seriously ill, but they feel that it's their only hope.
Dorsey Nunn is the executive director of the Legal Services for Prisoners with Children.
When you start holding people in and only giving them an hour and a half exercise every day or every other day, we think that constitutes torture. When you start housing people with an average of about 6 years and 7 or 8 months, then we got some real problems in the state of California.
This is not the first time prisoners have protested their solitary confinement. Last July, there was a 20-day hunger strike at Pelican Bay. It ended when the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation agreed to negotiate. But many prisoners say they did not notice any significant changes, which triggered the current hunger strike. Keith James is an organizer in support of the prisoner hunger strikes.
It's unconscionable, it's unequivocally unacceptable for this to be going on in any state or country in the world, and it's going on here in the United States, and a giant spotlight needs to be put on it because the torture needs to be ended.
Prisoners and their supporters are hoping that this time around, the state will make improvements. Calls to the Departments of Corrections were not returned. Smitha Bondade, Annenberg Radio News.
More than a third of L.A. County residents are born outside the United States. Some of their experiences are collected in the Immigrant Archive Project, which records videos of their stories about hardship, success, and the struggle to find an identity. One One participant was L.A. City Councilmember Jose Huizar, who described his family's unusual connection to City Hall.
But what's interesting about my father's life and coming to the United States as a seasonal laborer is that, like most Zacatecanos, you know, about 50% of the people who are born in Zacatecas today live in the United States. And back then it was pretty much the same. My grandfather actually had also made some seasonal trips to the United States to work, and he actually worked on City Hall for the City of Los Angeles. He told us stories about how he would use mules and go down and dig the ditch where the big base where they built the now standing City Hall for the City of Los Angeles. And for me to have a work there now and have an office as a council member, to me, that always strikes me. And I love the fact that my grandfather was a laborer to help build City Hall, and now I serve as a council member there.
That was Jose Huizar. You can hear more stories at immigrantarchiveproject.com. Marlton Square is a crumbling piece of property in the middle of the Crenshaw District. It spans an area the size of 20 football fields. Over the course of 25 years, the property once known as Santa Barbara Plaza has transformed from a thriving shopping hub to a failed redevelopment project to a virtual ghost town. And once again, the property is slated for renovation. Leimert Park's David Worry has been documenting the plaza's evolution through photographs. He spoke with us about his project and his hopes for the future.
Well, Santa Barbara Plaza has always been an unfortunate part of my neighborhood. First became interested in it as a kid when I would talk to older people and they would tell me about how nice it would be. And I couldn't believe that a property this large and valuable in Los Angeles could be allowed to deteriorate in this way. I'd always been interested in the aesthetics of wear and deterioration. A couple years ago, I had noticed that Santa Barbara Plaza, even though it looked like it was stagnant or static place that it was changing. I noticed that there was buildings that were slowly starting to crumble, or that they would be opened up and used for movie production for a period of time. And I just wanted to capture that change. I was really interested in how these buildings were breaking down and kind of being reclaimed by the environment. It was one kind of like a ghost town almost, the way that people kind of populate this place, but not really. And it was kind of a place that was so insulated from the surrounding neighborhood. It was just really surreal just to be working there as a photographer. Earlier this year, they started tearing down the plaza, and I'm just really excited to see what will become of this place after the buildings are torn down. I'm kind of pessimistic. I'll believe it when I see it, when this place, you know, comes around, because it has been this way since, I mean, my entire life. So I'm just excited for the future in that regard, but I'm also just trying to see what happens.
That was David Roy, a student at the Otis College of Art and Design. You can see a slideshow of his work later this month on our website. When people think of Steve Jobs, they think of his creative genius at Apple. But he wasn't just a game changer in computers. Jobs also played a huge role in the world of animation. Thomas Sito is a professor at USC School of Cinematic Arts. He told me that Jobs was a major game changer in the animation field. What did he do at Pixar?
These guys were all engineers and scientists and artists, and here they are entering like very high tech business world, and really they didn't have they were like buying books on how to succeed in business and all, but they didn't have the kind of vision and the kind of chops that Steve had for negotiating these sort of waters, and so he gave them that type of direction, as well as he gave them the freedom to fully explore and experiment and refine their techniques so that at the time that they were ready to make the first CG animated feature, they had the artistic team as well as the technological team.
Without him, what will the future of animation be? What do you think?
Well, I think he kind of launched a ship, you know, before Toy Story, nobody had really done a successful animated feature by computer yet. There was a lot of great hand-drawn films like Beauty and the Beast and Lion King. But up to that time, everybody thought the only thing computers were good for was doing the printouts of cyborg assassins and, and doing really good computer readouts for spaceships. And nobody believed that computers could be like warm and cuddly and could have like characters that would be appealing, like the, you know, like the ones in Monsters, Inc. or in Finding Nemo. So I think that he kind of like redefined how we watch movies, and he redefined what electronic entertainment is all about. And I think it's going to continue to develop. And hopefully there'll be people with the same kind of gambler's instinct and imagination as Steve to take his place.
With the movie Toy Story as being one of the biggest Disney movies ever, how did he help change the game with that movie?
Well, one of the really important things he did was at the early negotiation with Disney, he insisted that the name Pixar be right at the front of the movie, right next to Disney. And that had never happened before. I mean, if you look at the first movie, Tron, three companies did it. You know, it was the Digital Productions, Judson Rosebush, and Triple I, and a little bit of Bob Abel. But all those companies were buried in the back roll credits behind the caterer and the dog trainer. But Steve, like in the early negotiations, with Disney, insisted that the name Pixar be at the front because he understood brand name. He understood name recognition. And he knew that, you know, like one of the powers of Disney is it has that. You know, at Disney, we used to call it the franchise, which is when you think facial tissues, you say Kleenex. And when you think photocopier, you go Xerox. And when you think quality family entertainment, you think Disney. And Steve wanted Pixar to be in that league. He wanted it to be a name that as soon as you heard it, you knew you were going to get a high quality, a film to watch.
Thank you so much for joining us here today, Thomas.
My pleasure.
That was Thomas Sito, a professor at USC School of Cinematic Arts. More than 100 preschool students gathered today at Mount St. Mary's College as part of Jumpstart's Read for the Record campaign. Sarah Golden has more.
Every year on the same day, millions of children hear the same book all across the globe. This year, the group is reading Llama Llama Red Pajama, a book about a baby llama getting scared after going to bed.
Mama kisses baby's hair. Mama Llama goes downstairs.
So it was just a really good book to really connect them to, you know, something that they really understand, because children at this age, they learn best when you can really relate it for them to their life.
Though it may sound frivolous, there's a serious message behind the storybook tale. It is part of Jumpstart's Read for the Record campaign, and it calls for an end to early education achievement gaps. Jumpstart's senior